So I'm Kristen Oplanik from USAID's Bureau for Economic Growth, Education, and the Environment. And a warm welcome back after our summer hiatus from the seminar series. So we're glad so many people could join us on this lovely September day, even if the Pope kept us all inside. So market systems development requires key actors to change their business models, promoting economic growth and reducing poverty. However, these changes often require market actors to change ingrained mindsets and behaviors. We accept that logically, but the challenge remains in how to make that happen on the ground. And this is something that we know we all are struggling with and why it's important to share the lessons where we have them. So, non-traditional training methodologies such as simulating changing market and business systems can be highly effective at changing behavior. They support more natural learning contexts and help shift deep-rooted mindsets. However, simulation training tools can be complex and difficult to design. Today, Margie and Anna will share insights from market systems development projects in East Africa on the design and testing of appropriate tools. They will also discuss lessons that local private sector market actors have learned about rollout models, which will be particularly applicable to input supply and output buyer systems. So let me tell you just a little bit about Anna and Margie. So Anna Macharia is with TechnoServe, and Ms. Macharia is a program manager in their agribusiness development program in Kenya. She has 13 years experience in market and financial service development. Ms. Macharia has both practical business experience as well as project development expertise. And most recently, she has managed market systems development programming in Kenya's dairy sector for a DFID-funded project targeting improvements in the performance of feed, breed, animal health, and milk supply chain market systems. So I think it's the lessons from this particular project that she will be sharing with us today. Mike Field, unfortunately, has gotten too ill to join us. So sadly, he won't be joining us to present, but can be a resource. So, and Mike brings a wealth of experience in this field. He's a recognized one of the world's leading experts on market and value chain systems. So we're lucky to have him as a resource, even if he's a bit under the weather. Thank you, Mike. And Margie Brand is a senior technical lead for EcoVentures International. She has over 20 years of experience in strategic planning, tool design, and technical support in enterprise and market development with a focus on vulnerable populations. She has trained over 4,500 trainers and master trainers. Margie, how are you counting all of those? And has developed curricula and tools which have been translated into over 15 languages and used in over 35 countries. She's designed and managed several multi-million dollar development programs and has worked in over 20 countries in Asia, Latin America, and Eastern Europe with a focus on her home continent of Africa. So with that, I will turn it over to our presenters. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Anna Macharia.
And this is Margie Brand. And Anna and I are together in Washington, D.C. We are excited to be talking to you today about some of our work around what we've been doing in terms of alternative forms of capacity building, training, and different components to actually change behavior. And we're really sad not to have Mike with us. He's actually been updating us for the last 24 hours on and off as to whether he thinks he would have enough energy to actually get on this webinar. So I'm sorry that he's not able to be with us today. So moving into the conversation, we really wanted to start by pointing out that a tool is not powerful in and of itself. The tool that we're going to be talking about today, sort of the simulation methodology, is by no means a silver bullet. It's definitely something that is a very powerful way of influencing behavior and bringing practical experience to people, but it is one component of something that is larger. And we really are going to focus on trying to explain the context that this really works well in and how, and times when it doesn't work as well. So as you can see, we've said their solution is only as powerful as the problem that it's trying to solve. And so we really are also going to focus on what are the problems and what are the behavior changes that we're really trying to aim for in different circumstances. And in the same way, a tool is only as powerful as the behavior that it's trying to change. It is what we are trying to achieve that actually ends up giving it power. So that's really the perspective that we want to bring to this conversation today. We thought it was helpful to start by looking at what are key questions that projects in market systems development context are trying to address that are useful in order to feed in these kind of behavior change tools. And we recognize that some of the initial questions can really start by looking at what behaviors do we really want to change. And we recognize that in the context of market systems development, much of our work has been recognizing that suppliers and buyers' practices can impact the well-being of low-income smallholder farmers that they're either supplying to or buying from. And there's a need in many contexts for those firms to become much more customer or supplier-focused in order to drive benefits to those smallholders. And this implies often a strategy where strategic investments can be made by those suppliers or buyers to grow the long-term value of their businesses and ultimately build loyalty, trust, and stronger relationships with the smallholders. So these are some of the behaviors that we're often are aiming to, and that some of the tools that we've been using and that Anna's going to speak about some of the case studies around are really trying to address. After that, we tend to ask ourselves the question of what message is really needed. So after we understand the behavior that needs to change, what is the messaging that would be critical, and who are appropriate market actors to actually pass that message on? And then ultimately, what are appropriate tools? And of those, we're going to talk about one of those, such as using market-based simulations today. That's really the context where this falls in, that this falls into. We recognize that what we're really talking about here is experiential learning. And that experiential learning, we found, is a really powerful tool to support behavior change. There's actually a recent study that came out, or an article that McKinsey put out, on experiential learning. And one of the points made is that successful transformations demand new capabilities. And to build them, experiential learning leverages the intimate link between knowledge and experience. And what we've found is that the simulations are an effective way to make that learning more experiential, especially in cases when it doesn't make sense to be doing a live experience. We know that practical experiences are really valuable and getting a real life experience. And what simulations are doing is allowing participants, allowing market actors to be able to experience something but a little bit out of the reality of the real world. So it's sort of something reflecting the real world, but where it doesn't make sense, maybe because it's not practical to be doing a live case or be doing on-the-job training, so it's something that's more accessible. You know, what are we talking about when we're talking about simulations? I mean, we're really talking about interactive in-classroom activities that somehow simulate reality. You know, you can kind of think about people who are in flight simulators, who are learning how to be pilots. So they're doing something that is similar to their ultimate experience, but is not in that experience. And what that allows them to do is to actually make decisions and immediately see the consequences of those decisions, but in the safe confines of a training room. So a lot of that is about simulating something so they can build in errors and see what happens if you change a business model. What happens if there's a key market actor in the system starts acting or behaving in a different way? How does that impact the overall system? In the specific specific case that we're going to talk about today is looking at facilitator-led simulation, so something that's not participant self-led, but that's facilitator-led, so there's really a very intentional learning that can be built in. Something that's non-computerized. When people hear the word simulation, they're often thinking of something that's computerized. So what we're talking about today is something that's non-computerized, although there are many different types of training tools out there that are that are sort of computerized focused. But what we have found is in the audiences that we work with, and that Anna will be talking more about, non-computerized seems to work really well. Something where there's several modules that people work through and that are simulating different types of market systems with people almost in groups or teams competing with each other. We recognize that simulations are particularly effective, and I really want to point out that that Mike Field has been someone who has really sort of been the person who's conceptualized a lot of the link between what we've been doing with traditional simulations as a teaching method and a training method to look at how that can be adapted for behavior change in market systems. So I'm sad that he's not here to tell you his sort of vision himself, but this is something that he's been developing over the last few years. And I think the recognition is really that, you know, markets are complex changing systems. And how do you allow both market actors and others that are intervening within that system to understand and recognize what are the implications of some of those changing complex systems, where a deeper systemic change is often needed, and where it's often linked to needing deep-rooted behavior change by various actors in that marketplace. It's much more than a skills acquiring skill set or even acquiring a different mindset, but how do you really start aiming at a deep-rooted behavior change? And something where that behavior is often needing new business models and people to be actually changing the way or the focus of how their business is running, either by bringing in a new method of distributing, for example, or if they're in the input supply area, maybe they're using distribution methods to get out to more rural areas. Maybe they're working with producers, buyers clubs, and setting up, buyers clubs with producer groups, working through agent networks, village agent networks in different areas. Maybe suppliers are, or rather buyers or processors in a particular community are changing business models where they're actually, looking at forming much closer relationships with the farmers that they're actually purchasing from, and being able to track productivity levels of those farmers, working with some of the lead suppliers or farmers to be able to advocate for new practices, et cetera. So it's really changing some of that thinking. And this is something that we found, that simulations are really powerful in being able to bring those dynamics into a training room to be able to allow people to start understanding the various aspects of the changing system or what happens when they change in a particular way. What we've done is to adapt some of the work that has been done and that our organization, EcoVentures International, and others have been doing over the past few years. And the map on the screen shows some of the locations where we've been trying and testing the various simulation methodologies with other groups. And the small little red areas are showing where we've really adapted this specifically in a broader market systems development perspective. And TechnoServe, who and Anna represents that here today, is talking about the work that TechnoServe has been doing in Kenya. They're probably the most advanced. And this also sort of was some of the thinking that was birthed by Mike Field on how to start incorporating the market systems development work with simulations. And Anna's going to talk specifically about the work they've been doing in the dairy sector in Kenya. Feed the Future program in Uganda, the ag inputs activity through Tetra Tech, is also using some of these methodologies and looking at how to connect them to the work that they're doing. In the planning stages is some of the work being done through the ILRI program, International Livestock Research Institute in Kenya, also under Feed the Future program, which is very much at initial planning stages. And then the work that Mike Field is now doing in Bangladesh with DAI on the Ag Value Change project, where they're looking at and have started working around using simulations not only with the market actors, but also with the various implementers, implementing partners within the country to start understanding how can their work as implementers be affecting change in some of those markets, and what are the implications of some of those changes. And we'll talk a little bit about the methodologies that will be used behind that. We thought it would be useful to very quickly give you an overview of what is it that we're talking about in terms of the one case study we're going to use? And again, we're using an example of almost a training tool that's been adapted for a market systems development training context and will further be adapted for each of those programs that we'd be working with. But I do want to point out, obviously, that there are many different types of simulation methodologies and other people that are doing interesting things here. So that could be interesting to connect with. So the point of what's on the slide is not to read all the detail on the pictures, but just to show a very basic room setup. You can see there's kind of a facilitator on the left-hand side. There are participants that are sitting in groups. There's a gray facilitator table that has various components and elements on it. There's things up on the walls, and some of those are spinners that kind of move around. Things people kind of put little cards and randomly can sort of address, pull out different cards that are introducing different scenarios and issues. The participants actually have different things on the tables in front of them. One of the things we found to be particularly useful, this is an example of a variation of the simulation tool that is focused on the input supply sector, is where we've linked the improvements or growth of each of the businesses that the teams are competing against to not only a financial reward, but also the level of the customer loyalty. And so it's an interesting variation on some of these traditional type of business modeling, where people can actually start seeing that the greater customer loyalty and how that is linked to various investment options that the various businesses might be making, and how does that link to ultimate growth in the system. And continually throughout this simulation, what is happening is different actors are changing behavior in different ways, and you can start seeing the impact on the greater system overall. Some of the key learning areas that we found it useful to emphasize is the recognizing common challenges that are being faced by various levels of agribusiness, whether on the supplier or producer side, and or also on the input side. Is to recognize what are some of those challenges. And these are raised in different ways through the simulation where people can be forced to make difficult decisions around these. And some of those, and we put this at the top of the list, is responding to social and community pressure, which we recognize often it's not simply straight business. People have their own social groups, their own political groups, family groups, and these are often putting a lot of pressure on how they are making business decisions and what is actually the key behavior driving the way that they are running business models and changing their practices. And so this is a really key piece built into some of these simulations. Also, things such as balancing financial needs between the family and the business, even in larger agribusinesses, it often becomes a real challenge. And dealing with unexpected types of events and unforeseen circumstances. And then other issues around managing cash flow is really critical. There's so many variations of how cash flow can really make a difference in the business. So it's really understanding some of those implications. And also, and very importantly, is in strategizing and investing in different types of areas that can grow the business. And that's a really key focus in terms of what can grow that business. There are certain growth investment areas that have been built into the different simulations that are adapted for these different contexts. This is just generalizing. Some of those are options to invest in financial management systems, invest in stock management systems, various customer management systems and promotions that can be used. So, if you know who your customers are and you've invested in a customer database, you can then SMS information to those customers. So farmers can be getting information about what's kind of needed at a particular time, what kind of inputs are helpful, how to use those, what's on special because the input supplier knows they're about to expire or are needed for a particular harvesting season or growing season. How to build farmer group relationships, using different investment options, remodeling stores, working with village agent networks, whatever it might be. So these are all things that are built in and explored in different ways in the simulation. So I want to turn over to Anna to talk a little bit about a case study in Kenya.
Thank you, Maggie. So a case study for TechnoStaff programs in Kenya is that we've been working with EcoVentures International to for trainings in agri-market simulations. Training is a very important component of all TechnoStaff projects, but there have been challenges in providing low-cost, up-to-date trainings that stay on even after a donor intervention. And recognizing this challenge, I've looked for alternative low-cost market-driven solutions. So some of the things we recognize to be able to design or come up with market-driven solutions were that conducting direct training eradicates commercial training firms. So where TechnoServe in the past has provided trainings to input dealers as well as farmers, we realized that after that, you know, after the donor funding or that project comes to an end, rarely are we able to continue to see increased investment by smallholder farmers. The second thing we recognized was that working with farmers in some rarely results to working with farmers can in some cases be the least effective entry point to gain system change, as farmers have the least influence on market system changes. The third thing that we recognize is that if we trained the agro dealers or the retailers to see the value of the farmers, then they would be able to invest in changing the behavior of the farmers. So to make an impact, what TechnoServe did, we engaged with EcoVentures International to develop tools to train the agro dealers. And this is based on EcoVentures' already established methodology to develop tools. Some of the beneficiaries that we've been working with include large dairy cooperatives. These are cooperatives that provide support to their input supply dealership partners. We've also been working with input supply dealers as beneficiaries. These are agro dealer shops that are owned by individuals and serving farmers in the rural areas. The other beneficiaries have included academic institutions who are now beginning to train agro dealers. So, for example, the United States International University, abbreviated as USIU. USIU has even gone ahead to introduce an agricultural degree program that will be based, whose training methodology will be based on the training tools that have been developed by EcoVentures International. Some of the delivery partners, agents that we've engaged with are reputable management, marketing, and training institutions in Kenya. So these professional firms were not providing the services, the training services to input dealers in Kenya in the past, but through the program, after the training, they've now introduced differentiated and affordable services to agro dealers. So they include KPMG, SEWA, who are a local partner to Deloitte Consulting Partners. And we have PKF International. We have a local East African firms, for example, Septro. Marketing firms, we have currently working with three marketing firms, namely Dotmetrics, Consumer Pro, and Hub Ventures. We have private sector training institutes and academic institutions, mostly universities. We've been working with the United States International University to roll out an internship program that is now serving rural businesses, specifically the input supply dealerships. And as a result of that work, you know, that's just one pilot, other academic institutions have expressed interest. So currently, in addition to this one academic institution, United States International University, we are also working with five other academic institutions. Other agents include private sector processors. We're also working with government, specifically the regulator for the dairy industry in Kenya, the Kenya Dairy Board. Kenya Dairy Board is an agent for scale. They have a mandate to provide improved services to the dairy sector, and they're interested to scale market-based solutions to the industry. So we've partnered with them as an agent for scale. Some of the behavioral changes that we began to observe in the market, starting with the input supply dealers, is we've observed three main changes. So changes with investment, and this happened immediate 3 weeks after the training. So in regards to investments, there were commitments and investments made after the simulation trainings. Commitments include trainings of staff members in customer service, sometimes in collaboration with the input manufacturers or distributors. The second investment we've seen is in inventory or customer loyalty programs, IT solutions. We've also seen improvements in shop remodeling and product layout or merchandising. We've also seen investment interest in staff training. Staff training, where we have a retailer investing in the training and not having to depend on an input distributor to come and train on the products that they are promoting. We've also observed changes in the mindsets of the input dealerships. So, for example, there's been a change in the way that input suppliers are valuing or seeing the business potential serving farmers better. So they want to understand what are the concerns, what are the needs of farmers, and wanting to address that. We've also observed changes in, adapting to growth-oriented behavior. So in the past, the focus has been on short-term gains, so very high profit margins per product, but then now the input dealers are changing that strategy to long-term growth, where they even discuss negotiating with input distributors for discounted pricing that can be transferred or passed down, whose benefit can be transferred to smallholder farmers. The other behavior changes are with the support service firms. So these are market-led, and training. So TechnoServe is not providing the training. We've been engaging with the traditional providers of training services in the country. So previously they were not serving the agro dealers or rural businesses, but now through the program and after the training, they've developed, suitable offers to the dairy industry. So for example, we have the management, the marketing, the training firms, the academic institutions, the processors who have tailored their offers, after the simulation trainings. In terms of adaptation, after working with the initial pilots, especially with the academic institutions, they've further adapted the training to their degree programs, not just for, their new agricultural degree programs, but for all other trainings that have been conducted at the university. We've also observed behavior changes at the smallholder level. What we've observed is that there's increased investment in agricultural imports. And this is proven by the changes in revenue and sales by input supply dealers. So over the past 6 months, we've seen, an increase in the number of customers that are being served by the input stores, as well as the frequency, the consistency in purchases, the increases in purchases as well. At the farmer level, farmers are now having reliable and quality supply of inputs that is resulting in increased production and therefore milk sales. I'll hand over back to Maggie to just continue with talking about the case study.
Great, thanks, Anna. We wanted to talk about another case study which several people have asked us about, and this is just a small component of the bigger project, but it involves youth entrepreneurship, so we know many people were interested in this. One of the things we've been doing with TechnoServe is developing the student internship program that Anna mentioned earlier. And we actually call the student interns agribusiness consultants. And one of the areas that we focused on was assisting initially one of the private training providers, which is USIU that Anna had spoken about, in setting up and strengthening an internship program. They had a very basic internship program. So we worked with them on how to strengthen that, on how to start partnerships with other universities from which to draw students, all with the objective of being able to get expertise into the agricultural sector and expertise into being able to, because many of the young people want to leave agriculture. They don't want to be involved. It's not where, if they're going to run an internship, they want it in a lofty city somewhere. And so how do you incentivize people and sell this option to students so that they actually are interested in bringing their expertise back to the agricultural sector? And so what we also realized is universities needed the support of how to actually partner with the agri input companies to be able to host interns, so kind of how to make the market offer, which was originally cost shared, and then also how to train those students, interns. And this is where the simulation was really effective, because what we realized is those students needed to understand how the sector worked in as real a context as possible before they were actually planted in that system. And so this allowed them to see how that system works, but also empowered them to get tools that they could use within those internships so they could add value. So the students were actually empowered on using the simulation themselves to be able to train and empower those the market actors that they'd be working with. And also on how to train the students how to use those tools. Some of the outcomes have been really exciting. Students from not just the agricultural faculties have become involved. So what this is doing is it's incentivizing students that are not just in agriculture, but are bringing their other skills into agriculture. Several of the students have been hired by the firms that they were working with. So these students that are not only in agriculture and are also being drawn from these five other universities are now being planted into the agricultural sector, even if that wasn't what they were studying and they're from multiple universities. The universities have actually, are on the 100% their own funds, started looking at how to adapt, or actually have already adapted with and contracted EVI directly to adapt the materials to be part of their course and degree programs, and also part of their short courses for agribusiness entrepreneurs, which for us is affirmation that they're seeing this as something that's really valuable. What we've also found is that the students that are involved, some of the students have actually started their own consulting firm. So having graduated, have started a consulting firm that is now helping the agribusiness sector to be able to change and introduce some of these business models and new investments. So, you know, we're really excited because it's something that is sort of demonstrating that it's a way to these student internship programs with having the appropriate tools that they can use and they're and kind of guiding businesses in a way that we know will ultimately have sort of a poverty alleviation focus in the country is something which is giving legs to getting more of that expertise within the country. You know, what have we found ultimately about simulation methodology is that it is effective in some of these market systems development contexts where we're trying to change behaviors by reflecting real life context, that it's something that's highly interactive. People are having fun. They're seeing the impact of different business decisions immediately. It's kind of contextually relevant, and it's allowing people to experiment first and learn in low risk environments. And what's been useful is the delivery partners that in this particular case, for example, TechnoServe is working with, and also in Uganda, where they're looking at private sector and working with private sector delivery partners, is that those delivery partners are actually able to become the people that are training they're able to provide this on a fee-for-service basis, and they build that into whatever they are, their standard business offering is. So it's something where they feel that they can maintain the fees that are being charged. It helps them as a, you know, it's kind of market-related fees, which means that there needs to be both awareness around the market opportunity for them, but also awareness from the sort of agribusiness, whether it's input dealers or processors side, on the value of being able to pay for something like this, which is why some of those delivery partners are actually doing this as part of other services they might be providing to those firms, or also working, for example, in Anna's context, like she said, through large dairy cooperatives, which have, you know, 5,000, 7,000, 10,000 members in some cases. One of the biggest things we've recognized, and I mean, EcoVentures International has been doing simulation design for many, many years, and obviously more recently in this market systems development context, is that designing simulations is not easy. And, you know, it's, people say, and this is a quote from Jack Dorsey, the creator of Twitter and founder of Square. He says, while it is really simple to design something complex, it's really complex to make something simple. And the thing is that getting to simple is very difficult. And what we recognize is that knowing how to simplify something is a difficult piece. So, you know, we recognize that there's sort of this continued process that we go through where where we're really starting to look at how do we know which messages to push, because I'll talk a bit about our process and then speak about some of the challenges that can materialize out of this. So, you know, the first key thing is to research the market conditions and the underlying behaviors, which we've done in close collaboration with people like Mike Field, who's brilliant in understanding and seeing these, and the folks like Anna at TechnoServe, identifying some of those behaviors and those learning objectives, and then doing those in that initial design, testing things. And a lot of what we're testing is not just people's behaviors that change because they put into certain types of situations, not just how the numbers work out, because we've got to make sure the numbers are always going to work out every time this is kind of interacted with, but also the emotions. And the emotions are a really key piece, because that often is what is a sort of a foundation of behavior change. What emotions are coming out at what stage, and how do we make sure those are built in to be very intentional? We do a lot of testing. We do a lot of adaptation, training of trainers, and then also work with firms. And then on their own, already we're seeing some of the firms that are delivering this have done their own adaptations in different ways, which is really exciting. It's a key piece for us, is not just looking at adoption, but adaptation too. You know, this is just showing that simulations, one of the things they allow is not just a sort of a less riskable opportunity to make decisions, but it's also allowing sort of a way to experience emotions. And what people seldom realize is that it's actually experiencing disappointment, it's experiencing failure that allow us to really drive behavior change, because we can see what happens. And so this is something that is a really, really key piece that's built into the simulation type of experience. You know, so that people are kind of saying, oh, I lost all my customers when I made these kind of investments or changed my business model, or, you know, I can't handle this, is too stressful. So actually, even though it makes a lot of logical sense, it's not something I want to move into because I'm feeling too much stress. Or, you know, this seemed to work, but something else really burnt me. Yeah. So whatever it is kind of recognizing that those feelings and emotions are often what drive decisions. And we might think, and when we're sort of doing monitoring and evaluation, we're thinking, well, why is something that seems so obvious to us from a bird's eye view, looking at the market system, why are people not making those changes? And why is that system blocked in a certain way, or what's happening? And often those are absolutely structural, but often they're also looking much more at the deeper things that are driving behaviors. We wanted to talk a little bit about what are conditions for success or failure, and we chose three to focus on. The first is a need to introduce investment options that are actually available in the marketplace. So, you know, once again, this is not something where we just have something that's replicable and kind of gets rolled out as a silver bullet across countries or across contexts. We really look at what are the kinds of investments that firms can be making that can change business models that will ultimately have a beneficial impact on low-income farmers in their community. And in some cases, that means working alongside what projects are already trying to strengthen in the context of their projects. The other one is obviously this doesn't exist in isolation. So again, you know, framing this and coming back to what we started with, a tool is only as powerful as the behavior it's trying to change and the challenge that exists. And so it's really looking at what else is needed, following up with participants on how do they then change some of those business models. And preferably that's not something that's done through the project in the cases we're working, that's done again through the various delivery partners working with market actors primarily in that way, although a little bit of a blended approach initially. And we put the last piece is, you know, we often talk about simulations. It's kind of like gaming. And you really need to focus on being able to bias that in the right direction. It's, you know, when you're talking about delivering a more traditional type of training or capacity building, sometimes it's safer because you can be giving information and people kind of walk away. A simulation is extremely powerful. So if you're building something where, you know, you're definitely biasing the way that people's behavior is going to change. And so we take that very seriously. I think it's something we should all take seriously, is how do you think very carefully? Has there enough testing and trialing done to know which way should we be biasing something, and how do we change that? So in the same way that market systems development, anything we're trying, we're kind of doing it in small, riskable steps before we kind of take anything to scale. It's very much the same with this type of methodology, because it is so powerful in being able to change behavior. We've already got to be careful about the kind of messaging that is being put out and the way that we're advocating for the system to change. So we definitely wanted to leave enough good time for questions and discussion, and there might be ideas and input from others. And thanks for the very healthy chat that's happened. What we'll do is we've cataloged a lot of these questions that we haven't been able to cover while presenting. So maybe we'll just go through a few of those. So I'm going to start with a question from Sashi Selvendra, and then I'm going to ask Anna to address this question. And Anna, the question from Sashi is, how did you select the delivery agents? And did you have any local NGOs expressed interest in becoming certified trainers? So I suppose the question is both about selection, but also, is it local NGOs or is it other types of delivery agents?
So very specific for us, we are interested in working with the partners that can deliver the training even after the donor program comes to an end. So the delivery agents we're talking about are reputable, renowned professional firms, the management firms, the marketing firms, and even the academic institutions. And the way we went about selecting them is key for us was already existing providers of trainings, but then maybe those trainings were not, even though those trainings had not yet been customized to meet the needs of the input dealers. So that's how we went about engaging with the different delivery agents. Again, you know, just using the M4P tools, you know, how do you select partners? The will skill, we use the will skill metrics. Are you willing to provide, you know, these services to a new client group? That was very key for us. And then, of course, thinking about the price point to these input providers. In relation to having non-governmental organizations express interest in becoming certified trainers, that has not yet happened because, as I mentioned, the focus is in engaging market, you know, people who can provide these services even long after the project comes to an end. But the interest that we've seen with non-governmental organizations is in engaging the delivery agents. So we've seen a lot of interest in, for example, you know, programs that are being run, programs that have been funded by, in Dairy that have been funded by Bill and Melinda Gates. They want to engage with academic institutions to help them roll out the input distribution networks, you know, with university interns. We've also seen other non-governmental organizations wanting to engage the management consulting firms who are not only providing training services to the input stores, but as well as to the businesses, for example, dairy cooperatives, in relation to human resource, financial management, you know, advisory services. Thank you.
And Anna, we're going to refer another question to you after I address some of the others. I'm going to tell you what it is going ahead. There's a lot of people have been asking about the sort of post-training follow-up, the indicators, the how do you know that people are actually making a change and it's in the right direction. So those type of areas. So we'll talk about that in a second. I wanted to speak about some of the questions that are coming up. And one of the questions was about other cross-cutting messaging like nutrition. So what we've found is different programs often have different types of messages that they want to give through. And so we can start building those in. So for example, in the Bangladesh, one of the Feed the Future program, that's something where nutritional messaging is built in. So it could be nutrition, it could be anything. So what happens in the power of simulation is you can build in a lot of these cross-cutting pieces. The reality is you want to build it in so much so that it doesn't dilute the other messaging or the learning. So that's something we always keep a very careful hand on. But that's definitely something that we find is very important. Another question was about how do you start simulating? If it's non-computerized, how do you simulate some of these complex relationships that are taking place in interconnected market systems? And, you know, the key is to put scenarios forward to people that they're actually starting to play out what is that how does that system start working? And so you can imagine some of the, I wish we could have shown you videos rather than just photographs, because what you'd be seeing is people standing up, moving around, negotiating with each other, talking about different ways, thinking about new ways to move the system forward. So there's a lot of movement, connecting, going. And then what we do is we can build some of those in by putting new scenarios to people. So people who are designing simulations, such as we've done, can put additional scenarios in where you say, well, now this is starting to act in this way or this way. And the reason this is facilitator-driven is because a facilitator in the front of the room can see how the system is unfolding and can decide when to put new things forward. So can decide, well, this is a scenario I really want to try and bring out here. We're not seeing enough of this, so we need to focus on a particular piece. So that's been a really key way to recognize that this is such an interconnected system. So Anna, if you want to address the question about some of the indicators and also just how the, in general, what some of the tracking is.
So after the simulation training, what we do is TechnoSub makes follow-up visits with the individual businesses. We also encourage the change agents to make follow-up visits because they'll be looking for opportunities to provide additional services apart from the training to these agro, you know, to these input, dealers. So we make the follow-up visits, and when an input store confirms interest, for example, in investing in inventory solutions, IT solutions for inventory, customer management, or in staff trainings, what we do is we help them develop a scope of work and to advertise, to engage with a provider of those services. And we are preferring those providers that have already been certified to provide these services, those who have already gone through the input distribution training, the simulation training. You know, we think that they're most suitable to be able to provide the follow-up support or the follow-up services that are required by these input dealers. So we work with the businesses, we support them to develop the scope of works, and sometimes we even go as far as in helping them to negotiate for for a service offer from the change agents. In relation to how we track the investments, We have tracking tools, you know, that have been developed based on standard business practices. So, for example, even Input Store is investing in improving its distribution networks. We want to know, you know, what was the cost of making such an investment, and then what has been the sales, you know, the increase, the improved revenue that has resulted from that investment. So I would say as a program right now, where we have direct involvement, we are following up with the individual businesses to find out, you know, after this investment, what has been the impact on their businesses. I hope that addresses the two questions.
Thanks, Anna. Some of the discussion and questions are focused a little bit on some of the logistics. So I'll talk a little bit about that and recognizing again that this is one example that we're working on, but there are probably other examples. But so the simulations that have been used in Kenya are about, in terms of length of time. I mean, you're talking about something that is probably about a 3-hour training experience for businesses. But the key is, someone asked about it's being used again as the opportunity for people to kind of participate again. And the key is to allow market actors to participate as many times as possible. So in reality, that often means sort of 2 times or 3 times, and or coming back to it later. But you need to learn, if you think about your own learning experience, we need to learn from error and learn from a way of doing something, or we need to learn by testing new ways of doing things. So you almost have to learn, reflect on that learning, and then try again by testing something to see how things play out the next time. And so it really is key to kind of be doing this several times over. Someone asked about the replicability across country context. I would say, you know, the question is even deeper than that. It's really about, is replicability across market systems, value chains, as some of you mentioned, call them, replicability across regions, cultures, borders, whatever it might be. I mean, and this is something where we really don't see this as a cookie cutter type of something that's designed once and rolled out. It's really something that very much gets adapted, not only to your country or region. Like, what are some of the critical issues? You know, counterfeiting is a really critical issue in the inputs industry in Uganda. And so that's something that is very intentionally built in more there than in maybe some other areas. So it's really looking at, you know, how do you focus in and hone in on some of the things that are impacting industry in a particular area and adapt and test accordingly, which is really key. Someone asked about cultural implications in terms of outcomes. Cultural implications are and how people learn and how they change behavior is really critical. So again, this is not a silver bullet. It just happens to be a very effective way to be able to get the reality of changing market systems into a training room. Someone asked about gender and if there's sort of gender issues being considered. What we haven't done is to outrightly try and make gender statements through this material. It's very interesting how things unfold naturally and what you see happening by how participants are behaving. But this hasn't necessarily been used as a distinctive trying to change the gender norms. What it has done is been able to empower people that maybe not wouldn't necessarily be empowered by something. So it gives that opportunity. Often that means the implication is to women in a particular area, but it's not something where it's been sort of built in as we're trying to make a statement. Is it possible? It probably is possible. Would it take a lot of thought and testing? Absolutely. So, Anna, and a lot of the questions that are coming in are also about the internship program specifically, and about people and sort of getting employed or not, and what is the outcome. I mean, I know that this is kind of in some of the initial phases of the internship program, and I think the universities are kind of rerunning it now, and more universities are involved. But can you talk a little bit about some of that program? I'm asking you to do that, although I know we've been so involved in it too, but that would be great. Just a little bit more context about the program.
Okay, so the way we went about engaging academic institutions was when we wanted to test this out, you know, the simulation trainings, a lot of the businesses, a lot of the input dealers, they confirmed interest in changing their business practices. Again, there was need to look at low-cost, you know, affordable services that, I mean, what they can be able to afford. And not just thinking about the training, but then what about, you know, people who can help them take the journey, you know, in terms of investments in what they've already been trained in. So for that reason, you know, Technosurf had worked with USIU in the past, United States International University in the past, to develop and roll out trainings for board members of pastoralist, I mean, for dairy cooperatives that serve cooperatives, farmers in pastoral communities. And this academic institution, USIU, confirmed its interest to be able to not only just come up with the right training solutions for board members, but as well as they agreed to attach their interns to rural businesses. So what we did is, working with Eco Ventures International, help them to adapt their training to suit these input stores, you know, these rural-based businesses. And the pilot started with about 8 interns who have even gone ahead and set up their own consulting firm to roll out the trainings and take the journey with the input stores, you know, for a fee, as well as, you know, the United States International University now being able to engage not just their own interns, you know, people who are graduating from their institution, but then also partnering with other academic institutions, both local, I mean, both private and government institutions, and training them and attaching them to input stores. So I would say that that's the journey that we have taken. Yes, it's a really long journey, you know, from the point where USIU confirmed its interest to provide the training, as well as working with their interns to send them out to the rural areas, something that they had not done before, adapting their training methodologies to what is most suitable to input stores, and to where we are right now, where they are partnering with other academic institutions and recruiting from those academic institutions and sending them out to be able to provide similar support to other businesses. Thank you.
Thanks, Anna. That's really helpful. And we got a really good question, Yair, that I wanted to address from Wadila Sansole. And the question is, you know, do you have scenarios where this did not really work, and have you pinpointed why? And I mean, I would say yes, definitely. We have many scenarios where we've had to go in and make adaptations and make improvements. I'll list some of those as examples. The methodology seems to work really well. I mean, that's something we definitely find, is that sort of using simulation methodologies to be able to across cultures and borders, and it's something that works really well because it's exciting and different, and people can really get into it, and they can kind of feel their light bulbs. You know, I always talk about light bulbs going off. They can feel the sort of lessons that they're learning all the time. It's kind of this deep thing. So that works really well, but we really do a lot of testing. I mean, we've done things where, you know, it's kind of, you see you're pushing the wrong message. Like, it's like you didn't intend it, and start testing this, and you realize the whole wrong message is being pushed, and you've got to really go back to the drawing board. Or, you know, are you trying to, one of our biggest challenges, especially with working with partners who maybe aren't as familiar with the methodology, is trying to push way too much messaging into a particular module, and not realizing that too much actually dilutes a lot of the learning. You've got to hold certain pieces stagnant in particular variations to be able to bring out some of the other learning. So that's been something that's really effective. We've also seen times when people have, for example, used simulation methodology maybe for 3 days straight solidly. And it's the kind of thing where you really need some of this to sink in. It's about behavior change. And so it takes a while to have, you know, you kind of go through the experience, but the participants that leave, you know, you might have a maize processor kind of leaving, or someone who's, you know, running an input supply store kind of walking away. And 3 days later, as they're doing business, they're like, you know, we now are realizing, kind of the penny drops or the light bulb goes off, where we say, now we're realizing, you know, how this, what the lesson is, or we're realizing like how this applies to our space. So definitely something you don't want to push too quickly. It's interesting, you know, Ashwini Shandak has said, you know, what was the time spent to get the simulation piece together? And, you know, it's interesting because every time that we start something into a very new sector, it takes several months. So, you know, it can even take half a year of putting something together, figuring out what the messaging is, testing it. But after that, when we've got a basic structure, when we're adapting that for new contexts, it can be much quicker. And so it's something that, you know, it can happen in several weeks where you can kind of do adaptations for different places, obviously then still needing to test and adapt again. But the key is really to break through to the core, which is why we were very pleased to be able to work closely with Mike Field in adapting some of the simulations. You know, we've done a lot of, as EcoVentures International, we've done a lot of simulations, whether it's, you know, a lot of it's been direct business training. So you're training entrepreneurs on how to run, you know, sort of farming as a business and agricultural business more, or improving their business, or how to write sort of business plans to access loans or whatever it might be. So we've done a lot of that, but we really had to kind of get to what's the breakthrough for putting this into more of a market systems context. And we started with the part that Anna was speaking about, which is really focusing on the input supply side, and have more recently moved into the processing buyer side. And we're also currently actually developing something that this is sort of another brainchild of Mike Field and that he's going to be using in Bangladesh, is working with implementing partners, so other sort of development practitioners, on how to understand market simulation and how to understand how markets work, and what is the implication of some of our development subsidies or whatever it might be in that. So that's a very exciting piece for us, as kind of a development of this. And Kristen, thank you. I think Kristen's shared, if you're not reading the chat, she says from her, she participated in Uganda in one of the initial tests, actually, in the Uganda materials. And she said testing matters so much, and who's doing the testing, and kind of be able to see all the various pieces. And I think, for example, since Kristen participated in materials in Uganda, they've probably been at least sort of like, I don't know, 10 different levels of adaptation and different things that have happened, which is really exciting. But yeah, it's really, really, really critical. I'm going to hand over to Anna. Anna, I'm wondering if you can share with us, as kind of some of our, in some of our closing thoughts, some of the sort of the your experiences in terms of using these types of methodologies and how you think that they are applicable in different contexts. You know, how might these apply to other people's programs? What have you learned by becoming more involved in simulation methodologies? What do you feel now compared to several years ago before you were connected into the space?
Thank you, Maggie. What I would say is that, you know, this is new and in a very innovative way of training training people or training businesses, very different from how, for example, TechnoServe has done it in the past. There's a great desire to move away from those traditional practices. Not that they have not worked, but there's a greater desire to see more impactful changes, you know, quicker changes and quicker changes as well. So I would say that in Kenya, you know, there's a lot of interest to work differently from, you know, the methodologies that have been used in the past, both with farmers and, of course, with the retailers. So I would highly recommend the simulation trainings. Thinking about even, you know, very quickly, businesses are able to confirm these are the investments, or to confirm their understanding and confirm the investments that they want to make to improve how they serve, you know, their customers. You know, following the trainings has also been, you know, an eye-opener for us to be able to think about, you know, like how can we improve on the training methodologies that we are currently using, you know, at TechnoServe. So just in summary, just to say, yeah, we are excited about this, excited about the simulation trainings. It's of quite a lot of interest, not just to TechnoServe, but also thinking about all these change agents that we've involved, you know, reputable management, marketing management firms, you know, that are confirming interest, is proof that this is exciting and something worth investing in. Thank you, Maggie.
Great, thanks, Anna. And maybe I'll just address one of the two more questions here and sort of round out with what is the key takeaways from this message. You know, one of the questions that Matthew Dickert has asked is, you know, do participants in the simulation actually take on roles that are outside of their traditional roles? And Matthew, this is actually really key, is that people are standing in the shoes of other players in the marketplace so that they can start seeing, you know, how do different people operate in different ways. And sometimes that means actually simulating those roles. Sometimes it means exploring and discussing what they may have done differently or why actors were talking in a particular way. So that's an important piece. We again sort of as a key takeaway, and I refer to Ashwini Shandak's question, sort of on, so what are the key takeaways from some of this the cases specifically? You know, I think for us, the key is to come back to, you know, what we're exploring here are more effective tools, or what we see as very effective tools to actually influence behavior change. And I think the key takeaway is the need to change behaviors and not only focus on information giving, skill sets, you know, attaining new skill sets or new mindsets, but really changing behavior. And it's when we start understanding and exploring in our programs what are the behaviors we really want to change to strengthen that market system, that we're actually getting to something powerful. And simulations, we found, happen to be a particular example of an effective way to do this. I'm sure there are many other examples, and any real life experience is always useful. But it's, you know, the understanding the challenge, understanding the behavior that needs to change is particularly particularly critical. And again, being able to ask questions about not only the behaviors that need to change and the message, but, you know, this is why we really focused in on, honed in on some of those cases, is who are the appropriate actors to pass that message on? And then what kind of tools are useful in terms of in being able to be used? Because it's not only what message can be passed on, but people often do need tools. So I think those, you know, those four questions that we put in the beginning are really key takeaways for us, is understanding that it's about changing behaviors. It's understanding about, you know, who also are the people to pass that message on, and what are appropriate tools. So, with that, I think we've got to the end of our, discussions. And we just wanted to thank everyone for being part of this. I know Mike Field, again, apologizes for not being on. He actually was hoping he'd feel well enough to listen in and be able to contribute, but he hasn't been able to do that. So we wish him a speedy recovery, and also want to really recognize and thank him for his vision in being able to recognize how some of this can be used in different ways in the field. And I also want to thank Anna for being with us in Washington, D.C. We'll be, both of us are presenting in different ways at the SEEP Network Conference next week. So you'll be able to learn a lot more in depth about some of the various work that's going to be presented from a bit of a different perspective at the SEEP Network Conference. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Margie. Thank you, Anna. This has been a great presentation. As I noted before, I was very fortunate to get to participate in one of the testing runs in Uganda with the Ag Inputs activity, and it definitely was a powerful experience, even just doing the testing. So here are two things I want to throw out to you that maybe you can think about and respond to in our post-event resources. But given that testing run, I felt like it was not only good practice to do to get the simulation right for the target participants, but I felt like it was good learning for the project team as well, as to some of the things that were coming out in the way that the market was operating. For example, there we realized very quickly that the consequences to the bad behavior weren't harsh enough, which actually is what the project team is realizing within the broader market, and now their focus for the next year is to try to figure out how to make consequences to counterfeiting behavior, for example, with inputs stronger. But that was something the simulation showed the team as well. And so I wonder,
could this actually be a tool as a way to do initial market analysis, at least on specific parts of the market? If you had a variety of participants from that market and giving input as they do kind of a testing of the simulation as to no, that's not how this operates, or no, finance isn't like this, or it, maybe that would be another tool to help us do initial learning when we're setting up activities on the ground. Something to think about. I would love to know your thoughts. And then the second piece is something that, Margie, you touched on a little bit, but I want to drive it home a little bit more in terms of, I think over the last year, every impact evaluation randomized controlled trial that I have read about training shows it makes no difference in behavior. But that's traditional training approaches. So in terms of, I feel there's an urgency for USAID and other donors to really push our partners to step away from traditional training methods, which are showing repeatedly in these kind of gold standard evaluations that they're not having an impact with adult learners in particular. So this is something where I think simulations and experiential learning are critical and can make a big difference in our effectiveness. And I think we saw that early on with our Life in the Village simulation, which is available on AgriLinks. I think Joy will share the link in the chat box, which is a different kind of simulation, but also a very powerful tool that I've seen play out with multiple audiences. So if you haven't seen or heard about that, I encourage you to check it out. But thank you so much for the presentation. Look forward to continuing the discussion on these methodologies.